Today's critique examines a highly detailed white paper titled The Field of Viability Framework, which redefines health from an isolated biomedical state into the life course viability of a developing person embedded within complex biological, social, and ecological fields.
Yeah.
But to change a paradigm, this framework has to first survive the environment it actually wants to change, right? Which is the clinical frontline.
Exactly. And jumping right in, the conceptual depth of the seven primitives viability grammar is remarkable, yet its operational translation into the rigid, time-constrained realities of modern clinical workflows remains somewhat abstract.
Right, it's definitely a bit abstract.
So the weakness here is that the text brilliantly identifies how treating state alone, like just isolated biomedicine, is a complete failure. But it demands this massive cognitive shift for practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
It's asking them to analyze all seven primitives without fully addressing the friction of current clinical time limits, which potentially makes the grammar feel overwhelming to an already burdened healthcare worker.
I mean, we're talking about a 15-minute consultation usually. So a key theme here is moving from the isolated individual to this person in field, using constraints, margins, state, disturbance, perception, regulation, and options.
Right, all seven.
It's basically like trying to install a highly advanced next-gen diagnostic operating system onto older, time-constrained hardware. The hardware just doesn't have the processing power.
That is a perfect analogy. You just can't run all that software at once. So my suggestion is to develop a scaled-down, rapid triage version of the grammar specifically designed for high-pressure, time-scarce environments.
Oh, like a light version?
Exactly, showing how viability can be assessed incrementally rather than all at once. Because if a clinician is rushing and they just skip perception or regulation, they're going to revert right back to standard biomedicine.
Yeah, they'll just fall back on muscle memory. So what does that incremental approach actually look like?
Well, there are a few ways to tackle this, and these are just a few possible ways to solve the problem. But first, they could create a viability vital signs checklist that limits the acute visit focus exclusively to state, margins, and constraints.
Okay, just those three?
Right. So if a patient presents with elevated blood glucose, which is the state, the physician only needs to ask two targeted field questions, like, what is the immediate constraint preventing medication adherence? Is it transportation? Is it out-of-pocket cost?
Got it. And then what about the margins?
Right. They ask, does this patient possess the systemic buffer, whether that's sleep, caloric security, financial stability, to absorb a new daily care routine?
Okay. I like that because it limits the scope. The doctor isn't sitting there mapping the macroeconomics of the patient's entire neighborhood. They're just verifying if the prescribed plan will actually survive the patient's immediate reality.
Exactly. It makes it actionable immediately.
But wait, we also have to think about documentation, right? Because the entire institutional muscle memory of healthcare runs on the SOAP note, subjective objective assessment plan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you ask a burnt-out clinician to adopt a totally new documentation architecture, you're going to face massive resistance.
Totally. Which leads to a second concrete example. Map the seven primitives directly onto the existing SOAP note format.
Oh, just weave it right in.
Exactly. If you seamlessly weave the new operating system into the old interface, you completely bypass that cognitive resistance. So subjective can explicitly incorporate perception and disturbance.
Right.
Objective moves beyond just lab results to include measurable margins like resting heart rate, variability, or housing status. The assessment synthesizes state and regulation, and the plan is redesigned to evaluate options and mitigate constraints.
So the form looks exactly the same, but the data populating it actually shifts the whole clinical lens.
Yeah, you're hacking the existing structure.
Pushing that hardware analogy a bit further, if the doctor's time is the ultimate constraint, maybe the processing load should be offloaded before the encounter even starts. I mean, the patient knows their own field of viability best.
Exactly. Which brings up a third concrete example. They could design a patient-facing digital intake form where the patient actually pre-maps their own perception and options before they even step into the room.
Oh, I love that. Like in the waiting room?
Yeah. A simple interface where they flag their main disturbances and depleted margins. By the time the doctor walks in, the viability map is basically already generated.
So the clinician shifts from extracting data to just interpreting it. That turns the patient into a co-creator of the diagnosis.
Right, and it drastically reduces the time required to use the grammar.
Okay, so that handles the clinical workflows, but clinical adoption is really only half the battle. To get practitioners to adopt this tool, they need theoretical buy-in.
Definitely. They have to believe it does something their current tools can't do.
Right. So let's look closely at the section discussing the rereading of social determinants of health, the exposome and allostatic load. I have a slight issue here.
Oh.
Yeah, because by constantly saying the framework rereads or integrates existing literature, I feel like there's a risk it just comes across as an academic umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it sounds like a new way to categorize old ideas rather than a distinctly new operational tool.
Yeah, that is a really crucial point. While the synthesis of existing literatures is masterful, the framework's unique boundaries could be more sharply delineated from its predecessor theories to prevent it from being perceived as a mere renaming exercise.
Exactly. Just renaming things doesn't change anything.
Right. So the weakness here is that by phrasing the application of the framework as rereading social determinants or allostatic load, the material risks diluting its own disruptive power.
Yeah, it softens the blow too much.
It makes it seem like a descriptive overlay rather than a fundamentally new diagnostic engine that solves problems existing models fail to address. So my suggestion is to sharpen the argument by highlighting specific critical failure points in those existing models that only the viability grammar can solve.
So we move from synthesis to active disruption.
Exactly. You have to illuminate the blind spots of the old models. And again, keeping in mind, these are just a few possible ways to solve the problem. Here are some concrete examples. First, provide a side-by-side comparative case study.
Like the childhood asthma example they briefly mentioned?
Yes, that is a perfect vehicle. Show a scenario where a traditional social determinants of health intervention succeeds on paper. Like the clinic gets safer, mold-free housing for the family, but the kid's asthma still flares up.
Oh, okay. Why did it fail?
The narrative has to explain that it failed because it missed a perception failure. If the caregiver has deep institutional mistrust from past clinical invalidation, they might delay using the rescue inhaler until it's an absolute crisis.
Wow. So the physical environment is safe, but the relational environment isn't.
Exactly. A basic SDOH checklist ignores that entirely. The viability intervention succeeds because it specifically isolates and repairs that distorted perception within the relational field.
That makes so much sense. It shows why the physical environment is necessary but totally insufficient. And we see something similar with allostatic load, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it maps the biological wear and tear of chronic stress. But just mapping the damage doesn't actually give you a strategy to fix it.
Right. And a second concrete example addresses exactly that limitation. The author needs to draw a sharp contrast between allostatic load and the primitive of options.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
They should show how allostatic load is essentially a science of damage. It diagnoses the biological strain, but the introduction of options in the viability grammar forces the clinician to identify real, accessible pathways for adaptation.
It demands an exit strategy.
Exactly. It proves the grammar goes beyond just retrospective biological mapping and actually creates concrete systemic pathways for repair.
It turns it into an anticipatory tool.
Yes. And to really cement that anticipatory value, a third concrete example would be to introduce a specific failure narrative of a public health campaign.
Oh, like a real-world campaign that flopped?
Yeah. Detail a campaign that exclusively targeted statin disturbance, like maybe a massive city push to reduce obesity through diet education and taxing sugary drinks.
Which happens all the time.
Right. But demonstrate how the campaign collapsed entirely because it ignored the community's depleted margins.
Ah, because of the time poverty or sleep disruption?
Exactly. If the population has unpredictable shift work and severe time poverty, a dietary intervention just becomes another burdensome constraint. The narrative needs to prove that only the viability grammar could have predicted that failure before a single dollar was spent.
That is a really powerful way to frame it. Okay, so expanding outward from the clinical and theoretical stuff, we have to look at the macro level.
The really big picture.
Right. As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that commercial and institutional systems are actually generating the very disturbances and constraints that our bodies eventually embody.
Yeah, the food supply chains, the labor structures.
Exactly. But diagnosing a commercial system is one thing. Forcing it to change is a whole different beast.
I mean, how does a framework built on healing actually contend with profit-driven entities that couldn't care less about a life capacity test?
Yeah, that's the ultimate test, right? The framework brilliantly identifies commercial and institutional systems as condition-generating forces, but the mechanisms for holding these macro-level systems accountable, using the grammar, are underdeveloped compared to the clinical applications.
It feels a bit like diagnosing a hurricane but having no way to board up the windows.
Exactly. The weakness here is that the material proposes applying this life capacity test to commercial determinants, but without outlining the strategic leverage required to force a captured regulator or a profit-driven market to care about margins or disturbances.
So it's practically toothless at the policy level.
Right. It's too passive. So my suggestion is to integrate specific strategic pathways for collective action, demonstrating how the seven primitives can be weaponized as tools for policy leverage and public accountability.
Weaponized? I like that. It sounds intense for a medical paper, but honestly, polite requests don't alter supply chains.
They really don't.
We have to translate these primitives into the language of power: economics, zoning, legal liability.
Exactly. The grammar must function as a shield for the civil commons. So to build that leverage, here are a few concrete examples out of many potential pathways. First, show how a community coalition could use the disturbance and constraints primitives to draft and pass a specific municipal zoning law.
Like fighting ultra-processed food environments?
Yes. Instead of relying on vague public health complaints, they use the grammar to legally define these environments as toxic disturbances that actively impose constraints on the community's metabolic viability.
Wow. So it gives activists a really rigorous vocabulary to define the harm.
Exactly. They weaponize this precise, quantifiable language to legally restrict fast food zoning near schools. It turns the diagnostic grammar into a municipal legal mechanism.
That's brilliant. But you know, legal arguments almost always hit a wall when they run into economic arguments.
Oh, inevitably.
Like if an industry faces new regulations for air quality, they're just going to yell about job losses and tax revenue. The framework has to counter that with its own economic math.
And that leads perfectly into a second concrete example: translating margin depletion directly into an economic cost-benefit vocabulary. The author needs to explain how to translate the depletion of a community's biological margins into measurable economic deficits.
So putting a dollar amount on biological wear and tear?
Right. For example, quantifying the hours and wages lost by caregivers who have to manage childhood asthma flare-ups caused by bad local air quality.
Oh, so policymakers can actually justify the environmental regulations.
Exactly. It forces the debate to acknowledge that the industry is externalizing its operational costs by basically consuming the biological margins of the local population.
It pulls that invisible biological subsidy right out into the daylight. I mean, framing it as an economic theft of margins completely changes the policy calculus.
It really does. But we also need a way to hold public institutions accountable when they operate in silos, right? Because they inadvertently generate these constraints too.
Yeah, the housing authority doesn't talk to the health system.
Right. So a third concrete example would be outlining how to build a public viability dashboard that tracks the maladaptive regulation of local institutions.
Oh, making the systemic failures visible.
Exactly. If housing policies are creating eviction threats and those show up as chronic stress disturbances in the pediatric clinic, the dashboard visualizes that exact dysregulation loop for voters in the media.
It projects the pathology onto the institutions themselves instead of just the patient's body. That creates real democratic accountability.
Yeah. When institutions fail the life capacity test, it has to be public and politically actionable.
All right, well, let's briefly recap the core actionable insights from today's critique. First, we explored translating this complex grammar into time-scarce clinical workflows.
Right, with things like the viability vital signs and soap note integration.
Exactly, to make sure it runs efficiently on existing hardware. Second, we examined sharpening the boundary between this framework and older models like the social determinants of health,
using specific failure narratives to highlight its disruptive value.
Right. And finally, we discussed equipping the framework with strategic levers for systemic accountability, demonstrating how to use these primitives to legally and economically challenge those condition-generating systems.
Yeah, weaponizing the grammar for policy leverage.
Truly, Well, we warmly invite the author to implement these high-level revisions and submit the updated material back to the show for a future critique. When we step into the diagnostic complexities of human development, we require an operating system that recognizes the body does not merely exist in a field, it carries that field within it. Optimize this framework for the front lines, and it genuinely possesses the capacity to fundamentally alter how we diagnose and regulate the systems we live within.